My name is Julie Turney, and this is the HR Sound Off podcast show, the show created for HR and business professionals to discuss pertinent topics and trends as it relates to our professions. We're going to have amazing conversations with HR professionals from all over the world, get to learn their origin stories, how did they get into this profession, what do they love about being here, and how they want to set the record straight on that one misconception that really drives them crazy about our profession. Are you ready? I'm ready. Then let's sound off. Hi, everyone, and welcome to today's episode of the HR Sound Off podcast show. My name is Julie Turney, and I am your host. How are you doing today? I hope that wherever you are in the world, you are enjoying your day listening to us have a really amazing conversation about HR. Remember, the HR podcast show is created by an HR professional for HR professionals, magnifying HR voices. And today I'm excited to magnify the voice of a wonderful new friend that I have met over the last couple months. And I've had the privilege of being on her podcast, and I'm happy to have her here today. Felicia Shakiba, how are you doing today?
I'm doing so great, Julie. Thank you so much for inviting me today. I'm really excited to get started.
Absolute pleasure to have you, my friend. So why don't we kick off by telling our beautiful audience who's listening today, who is Felicia? What is your HR story? What made you get into this profession? And where are you now?
Yeah. So my journey into HR was really shaped by my upbringing in my family of entrepreneurs, where I really learned firsthand the pivotal role people play in the success of businesses. So kind of growing up around this and witnessing this, I realized very early on that the effective people management process is really key.
Right.
This realization led me to pursue a master's degree in industrial organizational psychology. And so currently I serve as the founder and podcast host of CPO Playbook. Mm-hmm. We do consulting and advisory services, but we are really excited about the podcast that we've been able to share. It's been less than a year, and we have already had some amazing conversations and amazing guests like you, Julie.
Yeah.
And then I also serve on the board for a company called Extern, which is a Y Combinator company. Mm-hmm. And we help people get more work experience in whatever stage in the life that they're at.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very, very proud to say that I'm part of that. And I think just overall in my career, I've had the unique experience of working with many different types of companies.
Mm-hmm.
And by that, I mean companies of one or five people to mid-sized companies to 200,000 person global companies.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all in different stages of growth and transformation. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, I think that this experience that I've been able to have has really impacted me in a way to say that there is no one way to do the work that we do.
No.
And that's what makes it so exciting.
Absolutely. I love that. I want to unpack a little bit about what you said about the types of organizations that you've worked in over your HR career. And this is a question that's come up quite a lot recently in terms of what's the best practice in terms of building your HR team. So obviously, if you're in a mid-sized company of, 300 to 1,000, somewhere around there, what should your HR team look like in that organization? Because it definitely cannot be a department of one, because that's not sustainable. What does that look like?
Really great question. I'm actually working with a company today of that size. So mm-hmm. I have a lot of recent memories since yesterday. But I think maybe I can tell you a little bit of context of like what I see when I come in. So that helps.
Absolutely.
When I come into an organization to kind of support and add value to this type of size company? Usually they're really looking to transform kind of their org design, I would say.
Yes.
You know, they've had a few HR people inside the function, mm-hmm. and all of them have been doing everything from A to Z for mm-hmm. a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And they're starting to realize that that model is breaking.
Yes.
And so they need to bring on more people.
Mm-hmm.
However, when they do bring on more people, and because a lot of fast-moving organizations can be very reactive.
Yes.
They bring on more people without really thinking too far ahead of right. what that model might look like.
Look like.
Mm-hmm. So with that being said, they bring people on, but then they're not really sure how they're going to work together, right?
Right.
And like they're very used to doing everything from A to Z, you know, how mm-hmm. do you hand off your baby, your, yeah. you know, client group to another one who, mm-hmm. where you know everything about them, you know, that's, mm-hmm. that's like a very difficult thing, I think, for HR business partners to do because yes. they've been taking care of this client group for so long.
Yes.
Right. And so I empathize deeply mm-hmm. for you, you know, if you're in that position, but you are not going to be able to do all the things you want to do and what the organization sure. needs
mm-hmm.
if you're, you know, for lack of a better word, you know, hoarding your client group. So we need to let go. And mm-hmm. and so what does that look like? What does yeah. the team actually look like?
Mm-hmm.
And so this is when I start to introduce the COE, which is the Center of Excellence.
Yes.
And I say, okay, Center of Excellence can look very different from one organization to the next.
Mm-hmm.
Generally speaking, in the Center of Excellence, you see responsibilities like compensation, mm-hmm. HR technology, people mm-hmm. analytics, mm-hmm. performance, succession, mm-hmm. and learning and development.
Right.
And what these people do is they're like the strategic pod
yes.
of your function,
mm-hmm.
and they oversee, like, they're like project managers.
Right.
for the philosophy, strategy, and implementation of, you know, of the work, of the expertise.
Right.
That's why yes. it's called Center of Excellence.
Center of Excellence, yeah.
Then you've got, excuse me, then you've got the HR business partners, and they are the implementers, the boots mm-hmm. on the ground,
mm-hmm.
the touch point for each client group.
Mm-hmm.
And each HR business partner should really roll up to a specific leader,
right?
Or leaders.
Yes,
you're going to have more than one.
Correct.
And they're in charge of what goes on and what that, you know, what that client group or client groups need.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones delivering and receiving feedback and creating the feedback loop between
right.
client group leaders and mm-hmm. managers and teams
mm-hmm.
and your Center of Excellence. So your Center of Excellence can really understand what they need to create, what kind of strategy they need in order to
yes.
provide and satisfy engineering or mm-hmm. your marketing
mm-hmm.
team or
yes.
your creatives or people mm-hmm. that are, you know, outside the United States. Like,
mm-hmm.
how do we create that communication, you know, and so forth. So I think at the end of the day, what does it look like, which is what you asked.
Yeah.
And it's just the starting of this formation of, you know, letting the COE
mm-hmm.
design and deliver and create products.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're creating product for
yeah.
HR. That's what they're
yes.
doing. And then the HR business partners are really implementing, delivering, and
mm-hmm.
providing customer feedback
right.
from your client group
mm-hmm.
on what those products should look like, how
uh-huh.
well they're working, what's not
right.
working. And then there is this continuous feedback you know, flow that's supposed
yes.
to go in and out between
right.
business and the HR team. So that's kind of what it should be, you know, starting to look like.
You have me bursting at the seams with this, Felicia, because this is one of my favorite components of what the future of HR looks like. Almost if you put it in 3D, right? And you said those centers of excellence run in a very agile way. So as you think about, I think for those centers of excellence, you're probably running on Scrum or a Kanban or some kind of hybrid in that way of constantly taking in requests for product, building product, pushing it back out, deploying it to HR, HR pushing it to the business seeing what it looks like, providing that feedback. There's a lot of design thinking in there in terms of what are people thinking and feeling.
I do design thinking in all the work I do.
I love it. That's why I was like bursting out of my seat because you are
speaking. I have my design thinking board up right now.
Yes. You are speaking my kind of language of what the future of what the now of HR. I don't even want to say the future of HR because I think this is the now of HR. Mm-hmm. If we really want to be proactive instead of reactive, this is exactly how an HR team should be functioning. And I think you've described it really well. I'm excited to see that work from a global perspective. But I'm also excited to see it work from just from even our perspective of like what you experience locally in the US, because I know a lot of teams are not working that way in the US. And also from what I'm seeing in the Caribbean, I don't think any of our teams, HR departments are operating that way in the Caribbean. If you are, reach out to me because I want to hear your story. But I don't think a lot of HR teams are using Agile or design thinking to help them forecast and create products and services and push them to the business beforehand. But that model that you explained in terms of having centers of excellence, I feel the word that we need to ingrain in our minds now as HR people is centers of excellence. Centers of excellence, more business partners rolled up to your chief people officer. And it begs to create the question about the sustainability of current structures in HR. What are your thoughts on the sustainability of what we have right now as HR? Whether it's you have an HR, you have a VP, you have a director, you have a CPO, you have your BPs, you have your coordinators, like the hierarchy of it all. Yes.
Yeah. This is a great question. So let me take it away from the HR function for a second mm-hmm. and just really understand what leveling means.
Right.
So leveling means something different at every organization. Mm-hmm. You have to, when you do a leveling exercise at your company, you have to be able to really speak to the expectations via competency and behaviors of each level. Mm-hmm. So for example, if you go to the meta manager level is almost like the director or VP level of like a small business.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not always going to be apples to apples when you go from one company to the next,
mm-hmm.
but they have, you know, each company would define the expectations of how that person in that level should perform.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times when you see, you know, chiefs, you're looking at ownership and strategic thinking and the ability to, you know, business acumen and agility and so forth. It's philosophy. And sometimes, sometimes companies will say they want people at that level to be able to be very strategic and mm-hmm. be able to drill all the way down, right?
Yes.
And so I think just to kind of sum it up, it's really about what works for your organization in mm-hmm. the growth period that you need to be in, and how does it relate to the culture that you're building with the organization. Mm-hmm. And that should really help determine whether it be a manager in engineering or a manager in HR,
mm-hmm.
right? We're not talking about function, we're talking about level.
Right.
What are those expectations? You know, if mm-hmm. you're a manager, typically it's like you want to be able to allow, you know, building effective teams, ability to hire well, bring people together and so forth. Mm-hmm. And then director is, you know, kind of the middleman between managers and, you know, strategy.
Mm-hmm.
VP is mostly strategy and kind of being able to do cross-functional teams really well because they have mm-hmm. multiple teams, or they should have, typically, right?
Mm-hmm. Typically. You would hope so.
There's always a caveat.
Yes.
and then, you know, you have your chiefs. So, mm-hmm. so with that being said, and how you think about your leveling in HR,
right?
Whether they're IC or manager or, you know, executive IC, you mm-hmm. could have individual contributor, which is IC. It really depends on what you need, right? I mean, you never really want to go into a conversation with a leader or in your own function as HR mm-hmm. and say, okay, we typically need this, 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 and this. And it's right. like, well, do we?
Right.
Do we really need it? And exactly. it's, you know, I always like to say, I always like to start with, what are the business needs? Yeah. Where's the business going in 6 months to a year? Mm-hmm. Okay. If we're, let's say we're growing really fast. Okay, well, if we're growing really fast, we need to put together a streamlined, you know, talent acquisition team. Mm-hmm. Who are the teams that are going to be hiring the most? Okay, it's engineering. Mm-hmm. Maybe we need two recruiters mm-hmm. for engineering. We're going to be hiring some very senior level roles, so probably more senior level recruiters, mm-hmm. right? So really just pulling and teasing out what yeah. exactly are the needs of the business and right. how Not do we as a wants. Team... going to support it. And if yeah. you're going to be growing, it's not just always about talent acquisition. Talent acquisition and onboarding are sisters. Correct. So let's not forget how you bring these people in and the yes. pace in which you're bringing them, in depends on how well you're onboarding people yes. and integrating them into the business and the capacity of the management, mm-hmm. You know, the capacity of managers in order to provide feedback and onboard these people. They have to take time away from building product if they're in the product function yeah. to onboard. That's part of their job. Let's say 10, 20%. So yeah, it's like I said, you know, every company is different, especially right. in like where they are as a business. Mm-hmm. And it's about understanding what the business needs are in order to determine how you're going to design your org.
Yes.
So that's what I would mm-hmm. start with.
It's not a cookie cutter approach. It's not a one size fits all.
we can't just take
what we see at Google or what we see at Meta and go, I like that. Let's do that, because it may not be what your organization needs. And you want to be able to optimize the cash flow of the business so that you really are adding that benefit, because, you know, they don't see you as the persons who make the money. But if you save the money, and you can show that you've saved the money, that makes all the difference in the world. But I love how you shared the expression of, you know, really being someone who understands org design. Because I think a lot of time for us as HR professionals, we get so stuck in the day-to-day of it all. We don't always recognize the value we bring to the org design piece of the company, which is where all things people start to generate and filter down through. So thank you so much for sharing that. I could talk about org design and leveling with you all day long.
I know, me too. I could talk to you.
Yeah. I could talk to you all day in general. I mean, I always feel like I'm a sponge learning from you. I learn so much from you when it comes to these things. So thank you so much for sharing that. So a big question that I really want to ask you, Felicia, having spent all your years in corporate, what made you decide to step out of corporate and do things your way?
Yeah, I mean, I've been in corporate for a long time, yes. but I wouldn't say that I've been there the whole time.
Right.
This is my third company. Mm-hmm. The first two were total failures, but mm-hmm. I've probably learned more doing my own startup than I probably would in a lifetime.
Yes.
So I feel like very happy about failing. It's like
I feel the same way. This is my third iteration too, so I'm totally there with you.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of failure, to be honest. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's great for like L&D products, Absolutely. Like projects and stuff like. But that's another story, right? That's another question. So, what kind of made me step out and do things my own way? I just felt, and this is just the honest gut. You know, truth is that I could just do things better.
Yeah.
And I think that someone who is very excited and ambitious to do things in a very innovative way, which is, mm-hmm. I think, describes me to a T.
Yeah.
It's really difficult to, you know, I think, deal with resistance. And I think that was something that I really had to learn.
Yeah.
And it's something I teach a lot because I'm like, mm-hmm. I was so bad at it. Mm-hmm. And so I just felt like I just had this like vision of like what I wanted this to look like. And I'm like, if only they knew what this change would do for them, you know?
Yes.
I know, I couldn't help myself, right? I couldn't help myself, you know, thinking that you know, I just started getting really discouraged from irresponsible hiring.
Yes.
You know, I would just see really bad decisions being made. And it was like gut wrenching, right? Mm-hmm. Because there are people that, for example, a great example of this is when I would, I came into an organization once, and the first thing they had me do was like fire people. And I'm like, okay, let's talk about that. Yeah. I'm like, that's not my favorite thing to do, exactly. But let's talk about what that looks like. Mm-hmm. So we talked about, you know, they wanted to let go of a couple people, and we walked through how we got to that point,
right,
with those people. And a leader would sit there and say, you know, we don't like the way X, Y, you know, she's doing X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, okay, well, what did she say when you gave her feedback? Mm-hmm. And they would reply, well, I didn't really give her any feedback yet. And I'm like,
seriously?
Okay, let's think about why that, you know.
Yes.
And the point is that it's not that they wanted to fire. I mean, they wanted to let those people go, but that was not the problem.
No.
The problem was that you need help leading, and you are, and this person at the time was a chief. And if you could only imagine, like, I didn't even need to go any further. If you could only imagine a chief's leader, and that she's got, you know, she's a COO, and she had almost the entire business reporting to her. It was like cringeworthy. Mm. And of this maybe like 100-person company. And I just thought, if you don't know how to do feedback, I'm like, imagine what your direct reports are doing and not doing.
Yes.
And like, there, I, in an instant, I knew almost everything I needed to know about what was wrong. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, and I, to be honest, like, it's, I still have those conversations with clients, unfortunately. Yeah. And I'm happy to have them, because then I'm here to help, and I'm that's what I do, right?
Right.
And I can make things better. But I think for me, I really wanted to have more impact, right? I wanted to have more impact in a greater way. And I couldn't do that being in one company.
Correct.
I wanted to help more and more. I'm like, I've seen this over and over again. Mm-hmm. I'm at a point where I see patterns all the time.
Right.
And I can, I'm like a, like a organizational predictor of success.
Yeah.
You know? Like, oh, I know what's happening already. You don't need to show me anymore.
You're not a barometer for that. You can measure
it. I already know what's going on. You know, so I just feel like there is so much work to be done.
So much
work to be done.
Absolutely.
And if I can help provide some perspective in a different way, which is, you know, which is very, it's very easy to kind of like, I don't know what the right word is, but just not like pigeonholed, but like vision tunnel vision. Right. Is that it?
Tunnel vision. Yes.
It's easy to have tunnel vision when you're not getting any external perspective.
Yes.
And I'm here to provide that external perspective, which just because companies just need the aha moment of we've been heads down, as you should be. It's your business. You know, we've been heads down, and, you know, I'm just here to help you look up for a minute and look around and
see what's going on.
Yeah. And see what's going on. And I'm here to help. And I've helped many businesses do this over and over and over again. So I can do it. I can help you.
Absolutely.
And it makes me feel so good. Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
People, I have a client today who the other day was so sweet, and she's just like, Felicia, you've really helped me like learn and understand. You know, this, she didn't have a COA. It was like what we were talking about,
right.
And she's like, I get it. And just seeing her like with that like image on her face that she gets it. I'm like, you don't need me anymore. Just go fly.
Yeah. My work is done. Fly, be free.
Right? Yeah. I'm like, go ahead, save the world. No, but you know, it's like such a high for me.
Yeah.
And so it's like my work is done. You know, here I'm ready to go on to the next. So
yeah,
it's really fun and exciting.
Rewarding, right?
Well, when you're so rewarding.
So rewarding. I mean, I totally get the HR professionals who work in corporate, and corporate is the only thing they want to do. That's fantastic. But like, for me, I see the importance, like you, of working with more than one organization, helping more than one leader, because similar to you, the frustration of the the politics of it all, the lack of understanding of it all for me in one organization is just too frustrating. Whereas now I get the opportunity to work with people who go, okay, we want to get on the bus and we're kind of in the line waiting for the bus. We just don't know how to get on the bus and we need some help with that. Or we're on the bus, but we're not quite sure where to sit on the bus so we can feel comfortable. And I love working with those kinds of organizations. Whereas I feel pigeonholed. I feel restricted. I feel like boxed in, and I almost feel claustrophobic in one organization, especially when I feel like I'm beating my head against a wall with a leadership team that just isn't getting it and doesn't want to be held accountable and doesn't want to support and doesn't want to do the work. So I totally get that. And I hear that from you.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Good. Thank you so much for sharing that. I got to ask you, what are you reading, watching, listening to right now that you think our audience would appreciate?
Yeah. Great question. So actually, I just listened to a podcast episode this morning. Mm-hmm. Reed Hastings from Netflix was on Tim Ferriss's show talking about Netflix's culture deck and among other things. I thought that was a great episode. Hopefully Reed Hastings will listen to this podcast and be on our shows about the Netflix culture deck.
hopefully.
Right. So loved the episode. And then Daniel Lamar is the former CEO and now chairman of Cirque du Soleil. He was on the CPO Playbook podcast and he was very generous, to give me a copy of his book, The Balancing Act. I read like one page when he sent it and I was almost in tears. I just thought, because it was a part of it was about how Cirque du Soleil, you know, they like lived through COVID. Yeah. And I was like, how did you do that? You know?
Yeah.
And I could just imagine, you know, they just shut their
everything
an entertainment
down.
Company. How do you do that through COVID? Mm-hmm. That's like the most gut-wrenching, you know, position, and how he fought so hard for his employees. Obviously, I read more than the page. I couldn't put it down. But it's just, I think, a book that not just from an HR's perspective, but just a leader's perspective on how to run a business with people and valuing your people. It just provides such great perspective, and I don't think gets enough attention. So
that is going in my Amazon cart. Absolutely.
Daniel Lamar. Right.
Going in right now.
Yeah. I was super impressed that, you know, because sometimes leaders, they just don't understand. Like they're very much in every other function than HR. And I'm like, don't you know what's going on with your people? Daniel Lamar is just was all about people. I mean, that's also the product, to be fair, is the people and talent.
Absolutely.
But I was just felt like I, you know, could read up one page and I understood. He and I were just understood each other so well on what it takes to make a great business. And obviously Cirque du Soleil is wildly successful.
They
so.
Are very successful.
Yeah.
Very successful. Actually, their former training and development manager is my coach.
Stop it.
Yes. He's fantastic. I'd give him to no one. Jay Guilford, 100% hands down, fantastic person. And yeah, an amazing coach. I have loved learning from him. And it's so funny how we met, because he applied to speak at Disrupt HR Barbados just before the pandemic.
Oh my gosh.
And then obviously they ended up on lockdown and all that kind of stuff. But we always kept in touch, and he shared lots of different information with me, because I just love the way that he was able to master training and supporting a bunch of entertainers. Mm-hmm. Always sparked my interest and curiosity. But he comes from a lens of, his talk was around bullying in the workplace. And
interesting.
He was sharing his story of his life as a corporate bully.
Oh my gosh, what a What a wonderful way to turn things
around. And I was hooked
I'm so proud of
on
him.
learning from him from then until now. And he's been my coach since the pandemic. So I've learned so much from Jay. Absolutely.
Well, big shout out to Jay.
Big shout out to Jay Gilford. Yes, my brother. My life would not be the same without you.
I love it.
I've learned so much about how to be a better coach, how to be a better facilitator because of the things that I've learned from Jay. And so I could totally resonate with the passion that Cirque du Soleil has for people and seeing their people be happy in the work that they do. Because when you think about it, the experience they give is happiness, right? It's joy. It's a little bit of anxiety when you see people doing certain things on the show, but their job is to bring joy. And so they can't bring joy if they're not happy in the workplace. So I could see why Cirque du Soleil works so hard to make sure that their employees are happy at work. So many case studies in this life.
Right?
I feel like we've got so much work to do, Felicia.
We have so much work to do. We need to get on it, Julie.
I'm having too much fun in this thing, man.
I know. We should just go on for another couple of hours.
I need to find a way to bottle some of this energy so that we can get some stuff done. But I feel like I'm now getting started in sharing HR stories, creating good experiences, and helping HR professionals to create good experiences in their organizations. I feel like I'm just getting started with that. So I'm excited.
And it's like we're on the precipice of an HR revolution.
Of an HR revolution. Yes. You were saying
leading
that.
Leading the way.
I know, right? Oh my goodness. Let's just blaze a trail. Like, I feel like all this energy, guys, if you could feel it right now, I mean, oh, you could send me in the comments and let me know. I'm sure the energy here is crazy right now.
Yeah, it's off the charts.
It definitely is. Felicia, I got to ask you the last question and the biggest question of all. What is the biggest misconception about HR that really bothers you that you want to set the record straight on right here, right now?
There's so many.
I know.
So many. But, you know, I want to say that here's kind of like a very particular piece of it. I was looking at a statistic the other day and about, I think it's about less than 20% of boards are women.
Mm.
It's a terrible, atrocious statistic.
It is.
I want to change that statistic. Mm-hmm. I think in addition, just kind of like on that thread, in addition to just women being on board, I think there are not enough HR leaders on boards.
On boards. Amen.
And it's really sad, honestly, because there really isn't anybody speaking on behalf of the greatest asset in your business if an HR professional is not on your board.
Yes.
And for me, it's like a very clear, logical thing to do.
Yes.
I can understand it if you have like a really very talented, you know, chief people officer in your organization, you know, that's probably like an exception. But at the end of the day, I think that we need to have more HR professionals and more women in general on board.
Yes, on board.
And so the misconception is that you don't need it on your board, but
you do.
Like I'm sorry for people who don't feel like that. But the value is so incredibly great, not just for the business, but for the actual board.
Yes.
Imagine having, I mean, there is another episode. I can't remember what number it was, but there was another episode about leadership, that where I interviewed this incredible guest, and he was talking about, you know, like the three different types of leaders in order to make people success, like startup successful.
Yeah.
And we were just saying that, that he talked about like three leaders. And I said, well, what do you think about like a fourth, like maybe an HR person to facilitate the three leaders?
Yeah.
Because what happens is if those three leaders, like he said, like the visionary, the executioner, and mm-hmm. something else. And I'm like, businesses, you can have those great leaderships, yeah. Different types of leaders. But the reasons why businesses fail is when those leaders fail, right? So the insurance is having that people's perspective, the ability to facilitate among leadership mm-hmm. is what makes companies last, right? Why would you not apply that strategy, that philosophy to the boardroom?
Absolutely.
It just doesn't make sense to me. So I think that mm-hmm. Having, you know, thinking through your board and understanding yes. what kind of skill sets you might need. I think that it is important to have someone with a people's perspective on your board. Absolutely. And that's a misconception that you don't need it. Right?
That you don't need it. Absolutely. I agree. And I definitely agree that we do need to have it. I even go as far as to say, I think that the head of HR in your organization should always have a direct reporting line to the board, if not a dotted line to the board. Because we are the only department that can terminate a CEO.
Right.
A CFO, a COO.
A dotted right? line is important for sure. I mean, we should have it no matter what, but that's, yes. we're still going to have a long
but we
time
don't
to get
have
there.
That, right? Exactly. So I'm like, let's start with the basics.
Right.
Let's make sure we have that dotted line to the board, or that we're actually directly reporting to the board. And then let's make sure that we are on the board. Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah. And then there's like the chicken and the egg problem, right?
Yes.
Does the board come first? Because the board member could actually recommend the dotted line, mm-hmm. right? From the HRO's perspective.
Yes.
And then, you know, and then do you have, or is it the other way around, right? Do you start with the dotted line to the board to recommend that somebody should be on the board from an HR's perspective? So, mm-hmm. you know, hopefully we can work it out.
Yes.
We'll have to do this conversation again in mm-hmm. like 10 years and see if anything's changed, because this is how slow yeah. we're moving. Hopefully it's not in 10 years from now.
Maybe we should have, let's try to have it 5 years from now. And if nothing's changed, then we go like, okay, I'll see you in 5 years.
Yeah. Right. This is
we'll
a
talk
quick
about this
check-in.
Again in 5 years. Absolutely. Absolutely. It has been such a pleasure having this conversation with you today, Felicia. I absolutely love your energy. Always a pleasure to learn from you, to bounce ideas off of you. And I'm so happy that you were able to say yes and be here today. I wish you every success. You know, I am a huge fan of the CPO Playbook, and I know your podcast is going to continue to grow from strength to strength. And yeah, I look forward to continuing our conversations. We definitely need to have more conversations on this show for sure.
Yes.
To support, educate, and help HR professionals to live their best HR lives.
Yes. I loved this. This chat was so great. I love geeking out over mm-hmm. HR, but doing it with you, Julia, is such a pleasure. So thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you for joining me for this episode of HR Sound Off. I hope that you found it useful. You can find this and all of the episodes of HR Sound Off on all major podcast platforms. Spotify, Apple, Amazon, you name it, we're there. Remember, HR Sound Off is created by HR professionals for HR professionals. If you would like to share your story, then reach out to us and let us know. Make sure to hit the notification bell and subscribe to HR Sound Off on YouTube as well as Podbean. And we'll see you again when we next sound off.